Good afternoon and welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Scott Greeson, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, the Eco News. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. At the outset of the 21st century, we humans live in a strange new world. We've eliminated a few diseases, smallpox being perhaps the emblematic example, but others have emerged from odd corners of nature to become new global plagues. AIDS and the SARS virus fit that general pattern. But plants get diseases too, and plant diseases can have huge implications for humans. Consider that Ireland's population declined by as much as a quarter in the wake of the potato blight. North America's forests have been dramatically affected by plant diseases over the last century. We don't hear much about chestnut blight these days because most of America's roughly 4 billion mature chestnuts were killed by the 1940s. We do still hear about Dutch elm disease and white pine blister rust, fungi that continue to threaten mature trees in North America. White pine blister rust has been identified as a significant threat to animals that depend on the seeds of the white bark pine, high in the Rocky Mountains, including Clark's nutcracker and the grizzly bear. Today, the north coast of California is ground zero in the eruption of another invasive plant pathogen, one that again threatens to reshape west coast forests and upend ecological relationships that have evolved over many thousands or even millions of years. In this edition of the Eco News Report, I'll be talking with three people on the front lines dealing with the emerging epidemic of sudden oak death, a fungal disease that is killing tan oaks and coast live oaks from Big Sur on the Monterey coast to Curry County in southwest Oregon. My guests today are Jana Valakovic, Leonel Arguello, and Dave Rizzo. Jana and Leonel are here in the KHSU studio with me. Well, Dave joins us from his office at UC Davis. Jana is with the University of California Cooperative Extension, where she's the lead forest advisor for Humboldt and Del Norte counties. She's been leading an education, monitoring, and early response effort for sudden oak death on the North Coast since 2001. Leonel is the chief of vegetation management at Redwood National Park. He's been assisting in the monitoring of sudden oak death on the North Coast and preparing for the arrival of the disease in the park. Dave Rizzo is a professor of plant pathology at UC Davis. He's been involved in sudden oak death issues since 2000, and his research projects range from basic studies on the biology and ecology of Phytophthora to numerous management-related issues. Dave, it's been 10 years since you named Phytophthora remorum. Can you tell us what sudden oak death is, which plants it affects?
Well, sudden oak death is caused by a fungal-like organism, as you mentioned, Phytophthora remorum. And this is a disease that impacts a lot of different plants. The ones that we see dying on the coast are tan oak and several species of oak, coast live oak, California black oak, Shreve's oak. So these are the ones when we look at the hillsides in parts of Marin, Sonoma, Big Sur, and now on the north coast that we see dying. But the pathogen itself, Phytophthora remorum, is actually a generalist that infects over 100 known species of plants right now. In our forests, these range from things such as bay laurel, madrone, native huckleberry, maple. On most of these plants, the plants don't actually die. It's mostly an infection of the leaves, where on tan oak and the oaks, it's an infection on the stems. And the fact that it infects the leaves of these plants is often important because that's where the spores of the pathogen are formed, and they can move from bay laurel onto the oaks. By having this really broad host range, we also find the pathogen on a number of plants that are really common in horticulture, in the nursery trade, things such as rhododendron and kalmia and camellias. And this is probably how the pathogen was first introduced into California, was on ornamental plants that infect the foliage but don't necessarily kill the plants.
So a general question, why should we be concerned about sudden oak death? I mean, tan oak hasn't been a commercially important species since the tan bark industry in southern Humboldt collapsed about a century ago. What's the issue here?
Well, with a number of these oaks and tan oak, they may not be commercially important, but they're very important ecologically as part of our forest ecosystems. For example, the acorns serve as food for many animals. In addition, they're culturally important both to some of the Native American tribes in California, but also as parts of our landscapes around people's houses. So there are a lot of different reasons we should really be worried about this disease.
I guess I'd like to add a few things, so that's a great place to start. One of the additional challenges is when you have high rates of mortality of these oak trees, you suddenly have a lot of fuels out there, and communities are certainly put at risk when they have, you know, a widespread rate of die-off of these trees throughout the landscape. So that presents an additional challenge. And then if you're in a business, for example, that might move any vegetation or might have a product that's grown in soil, there are lots of regulations that now influence how you can do business so that you are sanitary and are not inadvertently moving that disease around with whatever your business may be. So there are aesthetic issues, there are cultural, there are ecological issues, there are impact issues just in your own arena, whether it be, you know, trees falling around your house or this risk of, you know, wildfire, and then sort of a cascading set of impacts to our local businesses and our economy.
Yeah, and I would just simply add that on public lands, National Park Service lands, state park lands, which are available for all to enjoy and to visit, the loss of these trees in any significant, the way that it's been lost down in Central Coast California and around Sonoma and Marin, represents a huge aesthetic issue, and all of the other issues that Jana and Dave mentioned in terms of impacts to ecology and cultural resources are just laid open on lands that are available for all of us, and that would be certainly a significant loss to those, or impacts to those public lands.
This is Scott Greeson. You're listening to the Eco News Report. I'm talking to Jana Valakovic, Leonel Arguello, and Dave Rizzo about the emerging epidemic of sudden oak death, where it's at, what's happening, what we can do about it. So what's happening with the disease at the state level? Dave, you want to start with that?
Well, the disease is currently found in forests from Big Sur, so down in Monterey County, within a few miles of the San Luis Obispo County border, then moves up into Santa Cruz County, the East Bay, Marin County, Sonoma County, and then the main epidemic sort of ends in southern Mendocino County, although it is slowly expanding. The Humboldt County finds are sort of a disjunct population in southern Humboldt County, and then we have another disjunct population of the pathogen and the disease in Curry County, Oregon. So the main epidemic is around the San Francisco Bay Area with a few locations up in southern Humboldt County. The worst areas in the state as far as tree mortality, Big Sur is probably one of the worst areas. Over large areas there, we see a lot of dead trees. Parts of Marin and Sonoma County have also been highly impacted.
So in areas where we've had really heavily affected stands, what's the mortality like?
Well, it depends on which scale you're thinking about, but in some areas, if we have a stand of a few acres, we can have as much as 80-90% of the tan oak be dead. Tan oak is by far the most susceptible tree to dying of this disease, where we've seen very little resistance in tan oak populations. So when they become infected, they most likely will die at some point. In particular, larger trees, when they become infected, are very likely to die. Coast live oak and black oak will also die of the disease, but we do see some resistance in populations, so it won't be nearly as bad as tan oak. We won't see 90 or even higher percentage of trees die. It's probably in the 50 or fewer percent, but it's still enough to change these ecosystems. So while we don't think a lot of these trees will go extinct, what it will do is change what our forests look like.
So it sounds like there are signs of resistance in some of the species, but as you said, not in tan oak.
That is correct. So we've seen that particularly in coast live oak and California black oak, where we do see some trees that get infected, but they don't die of the disease. Other trees that may not become infected at all. But there are a lot of trees that are getting infected and do die.
So another question is about how this fungal infection spreads. there seems to be some interactions with climate and weather in terms of how wet conditions affect the spread of the disease.
Phytophthora species are commonly known as water molds, so they do have a swimming spore stage. So they need at some point some water. And in the case of Phytophthora morum, in the spring, particularly warm rains, the pathogen will produce spores on the leaf surfaces. In our forest, it's primarily bay laurel, but it occasionally can happen on leaf surfaces of tan oak and other hosts. Those can move short distances simply by splashing from the leaves onto the stems of susceptible trees such as tan oak or oak. In some cases, we have evidence that they can blow longer distances, maybe a mile or so, maybe a couple of miles in wind-driven rain. But the pathogen primarily sporulates in rainy weather. And in California, we primarily see the most active time of Phytophthora in March through April. Later rains, such as in May and June, really help the pathogen a lot. So we tend to see the best years from the standpoint of the pathogen occurring in years where we have late spring rains, 2010 being one of those years where it was quite wet.
It sure was.
Yeah, and we're hoping that this year is not nearly as wet. The pathogen can also be moved really long distances on ornamental plants, such as rhododendrons or camellias, and that's how we think it gets spread over very long distances.
So given the late wet spring we had last year in 2010, we are anticipating another surge in sudden oak death infestations around the North Coast.
Right, and you haven't started to see that yet. There's a bit of a delay process, so you've got those prime, warm, wet conditions, and they can be in the spring. I think what we experienced this fall was probably pretty prime as well. It was a lot of warm storms in October and November and even into December. So what that does is it stimulates the pathogen. The pathogen is able to readily make a whole lot of little microscopic spores, which get blown around. They land in a hospitable environment. They're able to insist into the leaves and then makes some more, and those eventually get into the boles of the tan oak trees and you see decline. You don't see the decline generally, though, until it gets hot and the tree thinks it's got the ability to pump up water from the ground and respond to that hot temperature come, say, July or whenever the warm weather hits, and it realizes it's not really functional anymore, and then you got this bright flash up and you get a bunch of brown leaves on the tan oak, and all that's where the sudden part comes in, because you've been looking at that landscape for a long time thinking there wasn't anything going on. But in reality, the disease had been working its way on these trees, and there was a sudden flash up of color once that heat hit. So I expect we'll start to see that this summer, being about a full year from the conditions last spring. It could be a little longer, but in some ways that makes it a bit more challenging for working with the public, because they don't see the impact of the disease every day. It goes in these waves depending on what's happening with the climatic conditions at the time. So we've had big pulses of mortality in California. We've seen a couple of those in this infestation area in southern Humboldt, since in our listening audience more people are familiar with our environments here, but I expect we'll see another one come soon.
You mentioned the infestation in southern Humboldt around Redway. The information the Board of Forestry's got out suggests that that infestation is growing at something like 1,400 acres a year. It's about 10,000 acres now. That seems like a pretty rapid rate of spread.
It's quite alarming. When I finally did the math to figure out the area where we know the disease to be present, and it's a rough estimate, and just took an average of, okay, that was over 7 years, this is how we've gotten to that rate. It's not a constant rate. There were big peaks and surges in growth and expansion when those climatic conditions were prime for the disease. And then, for example, in 08 and 09, following a couple of dry years, we just didn't see much. So it's not a consistent rate, but it shows how rapidly this thing can move and how much really is at stake.
Lionel, there have been suggestions now that we've got positive tests for sudden oak death presence in Redwood Creek coming down out of the park, out of Redwood National Park. And also, sudden oak death has also been found in the upper reaches of Redwood Creek. What's happening there? Has it gotten into the park? And what are you guys planning to do?
No, it is not currently infecting any trees that we know of in the park. As Yana says, and as Dave was saying earlier, the wild spring of last year, 2010, and fall of this season has certainly raised the potential for the disease to move into the park. But currently, right now, the infestation exists upstream of the park boundary in Redwood Creek, in Redwood Valley. And the inoculum that we have sampled from our baiting stations in Oreck are attributable to that infestation that we know of. We spent last year the park sampling up and down the Redwood Creek within the park. And just so that the listeners know, the Redwood National Park occupies the lower one-third of Redwood Creek. The upper two-thirds of the basin is in private hands. We sampled within the park as many of the tributaries as we can get to and continued sampling the main stem, and all we found were infestations in the main stem, none in the tributaries that drain into Redwood Creek within the park, indicating to us at this point in time that the source of that inoculant we were finding down in Oreck was coming from the infestation in Redwood Valley and not in the park.
So I think just to help clarify what's happened is in 2002 we found the disease in Redway and someone reported it, and at that time I thought, okay, we should be paying attention to this. And so I had been leading some educational courses and done a little bit of planning, some scenarios. Okay, what do we do if we find it here? What that kicked off was a whole North Coast-wide assessment process and monitoring process looking for the disease. And that process is through a lot of collaborations, like such as the one with Leonel. It works with the Forest Service and they do an aerial detection program, and so they'll look and monitor for dead tan oak trees. But as I just explained, dead tan oak trees come a little bit after the wave of the disease has come through. So it's sort of a mid-stage monitoring effort. And about in the early 2000s, Dave was developing some techniques on how to look for the disease using streams and trying to see if you can detect whether the pathogen's present in the stream. So we started testing that technique and have employed about 75 stream bait stations all around Humboldt and Del Norte and southern Mendocino County, which I'm generally responsible for, and then I pull in collaborators such as Redwood National Park to assist in that process. So that in combination with ground-based surveys, we've been trying to answer the question, where is the disease, where isn't it, where can you have sort of safe movement of plant and plant products from our forests, and how can you plan realistically around what you know, what you can't know. This year we came up with a surprise because it had been confined essentially to the South Fork Eel Basin. By the time we found it, it was a little too big, and we didn't have techniques well worked out to think about how we might respond. And so unfortunately we've been sitting back in many respects and watching the disease grow. Though we've had a number of experimental places where we've been testing different alternatives at the small scale but not at the large scale. And so this year we in fact found it very farther north than anything we had known to date, anything out of the South Fork Eel and up into the Oreck area, and that kicked us into a new discovery of a new location.
So just backing up a sec, it seems that sudden oak death is broadly restricted to within about 20 miles of the Pacific. Is that, as far as we can tell from the need that the pathogen has for wet conditions, do we have reason to hope or believe that the relatively drier areas to the east are going to be a barrier to the transmission of the disease?
In general, yeah. I think that's exactly what's going on. The other part, as we start moving into areas that are relatively drier, the hosts also change. It's sort of a combination of both things that as we head, for example, into the Central Valley down here, we begin to lose trees such as bay laurel. We get into types of oaks, and not all oaks are susceptible to this disease. Luckily, oaks such as valley oak and blue oak are not susceptible to sudden oak death at all. And so we also get a change in hosts. So our modeling and looking at the pathogen suggests that it could get established in the Sierras in certain locations, but that the chances that it would spread very well once in the Sierras are very limited. So the area that we're most concerned now is still the North Coast, and when you look at the areas where the pathogen's been established, there are still very, very large areas in Mendocino, Humboldt, and Del Norte County that have not been impacted by the pathogen at all.
They brought up the subject of oaks and which oaks are being infected and which are not and where. Del Norte County does not have the disease that we know of. It's the only current county along the coast that is free of the infection. I mean, we like to keep it that way. And as far as oaks go, for the local listeners, the white oak are not infected or affected by this disease, but black oaks are. And it looks to be like canyon live oaks are as well.
So this is the EcoNews Report. I'm Scott Greeson, Executive Director of EPIC, your host today. I have Dave Rizzo, plant pathologist and professor at UC Davis, on the phone. In the studio with me here at KHSU, Leonel Arguello from the Redwood National Park and Jana Valakovic from the UC Cooperative Extension. So getting to the question of what we do about sudden oak death, what treatments work, how do they work, Jana, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, and then I'd like to talk a little bit about the new rules that the Board of Forestry has just passed.
Sure. Well, treatments, of course, vary depending on your perspectives and depending on what your issues are. If you're in Marin County and the disease is generally throughout the whole area, then your treatment issues are going to be different than if you find it, you know, in Del Norte County, for example, where the disease isn't current and isn't present. So what we've been experimenting with is essentially a range of treatment combinations to address from the impact side of the disease, if you're just trying to deal with the impacts, all the way to how do you learn to kind of live with the disease in a way that still retains some kind of ecological functions and values from a forest, to how do you emergency respond and is it possible to suppress this disease so you don't see continued movement out of that. I'm guessing you're probably more interested in the emergency response side of the question.
I think this whole range of questions is probably important to the listener audience. I mean, it seems like it's a situation that has very serious consequences for people who own land with significant numbers of tanaac on them in southern Humboldt, but it's coming, it seems like, to the whole range. So,
well, I guess starting at the small scale, if you have an individual tree, an individual tan oak, an individual coast live oak, potentially a black oak tree, one of your best defenses is to separate it from the nearest California bay laurel tree, which is going to be the most likely vector for the disease into your area. So they like a little bit of personal space. That goes a long way to helping those individual trees. We're also testing some experimental treatments. One of them is a product called Agrifos, which is a phosphonate-based product, which you can spray on the bowl of the tree or inject into the tree. And what it does is it helps the tree absorbs that extra phosphorus and it's able to create secondary defense compounds, which essentially help the tree fight back. And so we've been testing those at the individual tree scale and we're now expanding out to the larger landscape scale and seeing some pretty promising results. So, I mean, the best thing, of course, is to stop the disease being vectored into your area. So think about where the disease is and try not to bring it home. Then secondarily, try and back off the bay trees. And then you might think about individual defenses for individual trees. Moving in scale to kind of the landscape level, and if you get this in, let's say, Del Norte County or somewhere where it's what we're calling isolated, we think of it a lot like a spot fire. You know, you've got a main fire front, but you have a new spot outbreak of a fire. What we've been experimenting with is essentially removing the infected hosts that support the spread of the disease. And those are, again, California bay laurel and tan oak. So we've got our experiments that have been laid out about 6 years now where we cut infected trees and we've been monitoring both the presence of the pathogen in the soil and in the rainfall as well as in the new vegetation that grows back. And we've seen really promising results. So understanding what's going on at the site level, understanding what hosts are likely to drive the disease, and then being able to do some fairly strategic and specific removals of infected hosts, we think will go a long way to slowing that disease down. I know for some in the audience, we're essentially suggesting cutting the trees in order to save trees. And that can be a hard argument to take. But I think some way that people can relate to this, and I'm not trying to move to the emotional side of this, but in humans, we deal with all kinds of diseases. And one of those is cancer. And we've decided that it's okay to, you know, remove the lump to save the body. And so right now we're testing the validity of that assumption, not at the thousands of acres level, but at the small scale level. Clearly, we have only about 1% of Humboldt County's landscape that's been infected with this disease. We have a lot at stake, and only about 10% of the California landscape at risk has been infected to date. So if we don't try something now, we won't know whether we'll ever be successful. So we're trying these in a very controlled, limited, restricted way with a lot of monitoring, a lot of adaptive feedback. But it looks like we're developing a set of tools about thinking about which species you've got in an environment, how they're likely to favor or disfavor the disease, how you can essentially kind of thin it out a little bit and promote the trees that you want to keep, promote them in a healthy way, and see if you can kind of tie that all together to create a defensible arm against the disease.
So 2 points there, Jana. One was that we are as yet at very early stages of this disease, and it's important to stay tuned. But two is you didn't suggest that we need to remove all of the 100 or so hosts that Professor Rizzo identified as, you know, possible hosts for the disease.
No, that wouldn't be realistic. I mean, that would remove much of our forest as we know it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think one of the really key elements is that we figured out which hosts are more important in disease spread than others and are working with that arm of knowledge about the pathogen and trying to interact with it. One of the things you also heard earlier is that moisture is really important. So we're trying a series of experiments that look at thinning a forest to reduce the relative humidity within that forest. Is there a way to kind of create a shaded fungus break, kind of on the shaded fuel break concept, where maybe you can hold a line by, you know, reducing the humidity within an environment and favoring one species over another so that you can prevent the pathogen from moving through?
You raise a really interesting parallel here when you suggest the shaded fungus break, but fire is a really complicated issue in forest management, even without considering a pathogen like sudden oak death. But Leonel, you've done a lot of work with fire reintroduction in the park. There's been some suggestion that low-intensity fires could retard the spread of sudden oak death. Has any evidence emerged to support those ideas? Or what do we know about the interaction of fire and this pathogen so far?
I don't believe the literature suggests at this point that the use of prescribed fire, and please, Yana and Dave, interject, you guys are closer to the literature than I am with respect to this, suggests that using prescribed fire will have a beneficial effect necessarily in armoring your stands from this disease. There are other reasons to do burning in local forests. Our local forests have adapted to fire over many years, and the lack of fire brings on a whole host of other issues. And so from the park perspective, the reintroduction of fire into our forests or into our grasslands is something that we would do anyway. That it may have beneficial impacts in terms of protecting some of these stands from sod, I don't believe that that case has been made, you know, with any kind of evidence. In terms of the fire and sod relationship, yeah, there's a big relationship there, where sudden oak death down in Big Sur has occurred across the landscape. The fuels have increased dramatically. That has increased the prospects of intense fires. That has had implications then on soils during the winter, increased amounts of sedimentation, all those factors.
And community safety.
The community safety, firefighting safety, all of those factors come in. And of course, the impact on the stands that you have behind after tanooks are fallen on the ground. If you have limited stands of some resource like old growth trees near the southern end of the range, those might be impacted. Old growth redwood trees might be impacted from a high intensity fire.
That brings me to maybe the most important, and I'm afraid my last question, which is for all of you. What do you think the forests of the North Coast are going to look like in the future in the aftermath of sudden oak death? What's our best guess?
I think tan oak is going to still be present. Let's forecast maybe 100 years forward, and that is assuming that we're not successful in finding some way to slow it down. But I don't think it'll be a tree. I think it'll be a shrub form. So that means we won't have the same kind of acorn mass production that we've had for a very long time. I think, you know, other trees will quickly occupy the site, so I don't think we're going to see denuded, barren forest environments. Doug fir, easily, given a little bit of advantage, will grow fast. But, you know, again, on this assumption that we aren't successful, I think we're going to see a lot more California bay laurel. It's able to regenerate in its own shade really well, and it can seem to persist with this disease and help facilitate its spread. So it really, I think, will be an interesting landscape. But
laurel doesn't make food for critters quite the way that...
No. So there'll be other interactions, having that loss of acorn mass production.
Yeah, and I believe the other impact is to those tan oak trees that have persisted over the many centuries that were managed by the local tribes and are still used today by the local tribes. I know in Redwood National Park there are significant stands of very old, very large tan oak trees around our grasslands. And these may likely be killed, and we lose that legacy. We lose that connection, and that would be a sad impact, along with the ecological impact that this disease may have. And it's a scary thought.
Professor Rizzo, any last thoughts?
Well, you brought up in your introduction the example of chestnut blight, and chestnut trees were the largest hardwood tree in eastern North America. They didn't go extinct. They survive as a shrub, and as Yana pointed out, potentially, if we can't come up with a way of slowing this, that's what we're going to see with tan oak. So I think that's a very good analogy from that standpoint. And much like in the eastern forest, the forests didn't disappear. They're just different.
Indeed.
And that's what's going to happen.
Well, thank you very much for your time. This has been the Eco-News Report. My name is Scott Greeson. I've been your host for the past half hour. My guests today have been Yana Valakovic, Director of the University of California Cooperative Extension and Local Forest Advisor for Humboldt and Del Norte Counties. You can find the UC Extension on the web at cehumboldt.ucdavis.edu, or you can call them at 707-445-7351 for more information. Leonel Arguello is the Chief of Vegetation Management at Redwood National Park. The main Park Service website for the Redwood National Park is at www.nps.gov/redw. And Dave Rizzo is Professor of Plant Pathology at UC Davis. You can explore a substantial list of Professor Rizzo's publications online at plantpathology.ucdavis.edu/faculty/Rizzo. And finally, the California Oak Mortality Task Force maintains a very informative website at suddenoakdeath.org, which has overviews of current research, explications of best management practices, and links to relevant regulations and media coverage. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The EcoNews Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University, in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again next Thursday at 1:30 here on KHSU.